on tonight's KRBD Evening Report. Ketchikan City Council talks port and infrastructure project funding, plus two upcoming events to remember those we've lost this year, and a Christmas tree from Wrangell will adorn the governor's mansion this year. All that and more coming up. First, let's take a look at the weather. We'll have a high wind warning in effect tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with gusts up to 60 miles an hour. Tonight, widespread rain showers with lows in the mid-30s and southeast winds to 25 miles an hour. Tomorrow, rain that may be heavy at times along with that high wind warning. Highs in the mid-40s and southeast winds to 35 miles an hour, gusting to around 60. Wednesday night, rain that may be heavy at times with lows around 40 and south winds to 30 miles an hour. For Thanksgiving Day, rain with highs in the mid-40s and south winds to 25 miles an hour. And Thursday night, rain showers likely with lows in the mid-30s. It's the KRBD Evening Report. I'm Eric Stone. Ketchikan City Council returned to a familiar topic Monday, how to extract money for infrastructure and other community needs from the city-owned port. The problem for the city is a provision of the U.S. Constitution.
Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3. We're not going to change the tonnage clause. We're not going to get rid of it. We're not going to have anybody change it for us.
That's City Council member Mark Flora. The Constitution's tonnage clause requires that money collected from ships visiting ports must be spent on things that directly benefit the ships themselves. That means head taxes and dockage fees can pay for longshoremen and mooring dolphins, but not for firefighters or garbage collectors.
We literally have rules of the financial model that we operate from as a community from the year 1787. Before surface water passage of humans for pleasure had been conceived. I don't believe that's in the best interest of the community.
Last year, two private port companies offered proposals to take over the day-to-day management of Ketchikan's city-owned downtown cruise ship berths. The operators would have collected fees from docking cruise ships and paid rent to the city. That, so the theory goes, would have allowed the city to spend money on things like water pipes and police officers, not to mention long overdue port upgrades and maintenance. The council at the time voted down the proposals 4-3 after strong public pushback. Many residents said they were concerned that hiring a private port operator would mean giving up control of the city-owned docks. At Monday's meeting, City Council member Abby Bradbury suggested reaching out to individual cruise lines to see if they'd be willing to finance infrastructure projects.
I guess my intention was to start the conversation on what we need as a community monetarily, you know, using the fees off, you know, for necessities. What is their long-term plan?
Council members Riley Gass and Jay Matani made similar suggestions. Acting City Manager Lacey Simpson said the city was already in talks with Cruise Lines International Association, or CLIA. She said the industry group is currently working on a 10-year projection of the port's needs. Simpson said the city and the cruise line group would reconvene at a later date to determine how the projects could be funded.
It doesn't differ a whole lot from the conversation that we've already started with CLIA as a whole. We can certainly break it apart. I'm just not sure what the intended result will be, but we can start that conversation and see where it goes.
Mayor Dave Kiefer suggested that operators might be willing to finance, for instance, port upgrades, but it would come with a price.
That's going to cost control. There are lines out there tomorrow who would extend berth one if we gave them preferential berthing.
Flora, meanwhile, suggested that the current system meant the city was already not the master of its own fate.
If you don't control the money, you're not in control.
In an informal poll, a majority of the council directed the manager to reach out to individual cruise lines to discuss funding community needs, but those meetings likely won't happen until after the city's end-of-year budget meetings, according to the mayor. In other business, Bradbury and a majority of the council directed the manager to sketch out a job description for a proposed new city tourism manager for the council's mid-December meeting. The potential new position would focus on bringing more visitors into the community. And a quick disclosure, Councilmember Jay Matani is also a member of KRBD's nonprofit board of directors, which does not direct the station's news coverage. PeaceHealth Ketchikan Medical Center is preparing for its 6th annual memorial service and hospice tree decorating. The two events fall within the holiday season and are meant as a time for celebration, remembrance, and reflection. Chaplain Margie Adams says the two events are a way to recognize the hardships of the past 2 years and honor those who the community has lost.
It's an honor to be part of the last moments of a person's life, and who they are and what they accomplished matters. compassionate and gentle events such as this have layers of meaning for every one of us with this pandemic. Yes. With more than 700,000 people have died, and it's important to acknowledge that communal loss as well.
The memorial service will be a virtual event live streamed on Peace Health's Facebook page, much like last year's. This year, Adam says the Catholic Hospital's memorial service will include pre-recorded elements of prayer and song that will follow a reading of names of those who have passed. Family members and loved ones are invited to tune in at November 27th at 10 a.m. or later watch on demand. Another event, the Hospice Tree, will also serve as a visual representation of loss and remembrance. Starting November 26th in Ketchikan's Plaza Mall, Peace Health's Hospice Center will host a fundraiser for the hospice service, where members of the community can purchase a ribbon of fabric where they can write the name of a loved one who has passed and put it on the tree. Ribbons from past years have been fashioned into wreaths that will be hung near this year's tree, according to Peace Health's hospice coordinator. All proceeds from the hospice tree go towards onboarding and training for new hospice volunteers. The hospice service provided by Peace Health is completely free to families. Trained staff work alongside some 20 trained hospice volunteers in Ketchikan and 4 on Prince of Wales Island to comfort the sick in their final days. Anyone who would like to pay their respects or donate is welcome to come to the plaza during regular business hours starting November 26th or contact the hospice center directly. Health officials reported 15 new cases of COVID-19 on Ketchikan's pandemic dashboard as of 5 p.m. today. 100 cases are listed as active. A Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center webpage updated by 11 a.m. daily shows 4 people are hospitalized with the disease in Ketchikan. No new deaths linked to COVID-19 were reported in Ketchikan by the State Health Department. 13 COVID-19-related deaths have been reported in Ketchikan. In the past 7 days, there have been 89 new positives. The state-issued COVID-19 alert level for Ketchikan is high, the maximum level. Ketchikan's COVID-19 dashboard is available at the borough's website. That's kgbak.us. The state's is at data.coronavirus.alaska.gov. No new COVID-19 updates for Prince of Wales Island. Health officials yesterday said there were 0 active cases on the island and the risk level was low. Authorities in Metlakatla reported 2 new cases in their most recent update. That was yesterday, Monday evening. The risk level in Metlakatla is now level 2. That's the second highest mark. There's updates about COVID-19 at the Metlakatla Indian Community Facebook page. The Biden administration today formally began the process of restoring roadless protections to millions of acres of Southeast Alaska's federal forest lands. It opens up a 60-day comment period to undo action taken by the Trump administration that critics say could lead to more old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest, as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
A notice in the Federal Register published Tuesday says Southeast Alaska's timber industry is shrinking. Tongass National Forest-related logging and sawmilling sectors fell from just shy of 200 jobs in the early 2000s to around 60 workers in 2018. The U.S. Department of Agriculture argues restoring the 2001 roadless rule reflects the Biden administration's priorities to build on the region's tourism and fishing sectors. The U.S. Forest Service has already frozen old-growth timber sales under the current administration. Drought Unlimited's Austin Williams says Alaska Governor Bill Walker's 2018 petition to exempt the Tongass National Forest from roadless protections put too much emphasis on commercial logging.
You know, it's really time that we just move past that and we recognize that there's more value on the forest, keeping it and conserving it so that we can have fish and wildlife, so that we can have tourism, so that we can have cultural and traditional uses, and to help fight climate change.
The roadless rule would apply to about 9 million acres of the Tongass, but in practical terms, it could protect at most about 168,000 acres of old-growth forest from clear-cut. Governor Mike Dunleavy and Alaska's congressional delegation strongly supported the Trump administration's exemption of roadless. Randy Rurow, the governor's chief of staff, recently said bringing back the rule is part of a larger pattern of federal overreach.
And we think that discretion for the forest to be managed should continue to be at the local level. We don't need Washington, D.C. with a one-size-fits-all rule for every forest in the nation.
A lawsuit by the state to block the Biden administration's moves to bring back roadless on the Tongass was dismissed last week by a federal appeals court. And a separate lawsuit by a coalition of tribes and ecological groups in favor of roadless protections remains pending, but could be rendered moot by the new change in direction. Tuesday's action opens up a 2-month comment period required to bring back roadless, but even if that eventually happens, barring an act of Congress, it could be reversed again by a future administration. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Every year during the holiday season, the U.S. Forest Service in Alaska sends a tree to decorate the governor's mansion in Juneau. This year, it was Wrangell's turn to provide the tree. KSTK's Sage Smiley attended a ceremony where Wrangell's tribe blessed the chosen pine tree before it was sent up north.
Tiny flakes of snow fell Thursday morning on the small crowd assembled at Shakes Island in Wrangell's Inner Harbor to bless a towering conifer bound for Alaska's capital city. Wrangell Cooperative Association citizen Virginia Oliver wore a woven cedar hat and beaded gloves and carried a painted drum.
So good to see all of you. Good morning. Welcome onto the ancestral home of the Nanya Ayi.
Volunteers held the 14-foot lodgepole pine to be blessed upright in front of the red and black bear carving, which frames the Chief Sheikh's house doorway. The tree was picked by the U.S. Forest Service's Wrangell Ranger District. Acting District Ranger Tori Hauser says it's important for the U.S. Forest Service that the pine tree be blessed by the people whose land it came from.
So we were able to sustainably harvest this tree from Edelin Island, and it's known as the Togetherness Tree. And like the trees that stand in the forest together, we are all stronger when we all stand together. So I'm so glad that we're all here, and thank you very much.
WCA Tribal President Richard Oliver expressed gratitude to the Forest Service, Coast Guard, and Wrangell High School's Tlingit language class for being there.
First of all, I'd like to thank the tree for giving itself up to for the governor, and it's a very nice gift.
To bless the together tree, tribal elders and the high school language learners sang while walking slowly around the tree, waving fronds of cedar. Some wore Tlingit cedar hats or button blankets. The tree and its place at the governor's mansion coincide with Christmas, but it's meant to represent more than just one winter holiday. Wrangell Tribal citizen Virginia Oliver explains that the cedar fronds used in the blessing are not just scraps.
The president asked the tree and took the bottom fronds, and then he gave pieces to everybody, and they were just blessing as they went around. We've done this before, the last time a tree left.
That last time was in 2018, when the community procured the governor's mansion tree shortly after Governor Dunleavy was elected. The Forest Service says this is the fifth year in a row that the together tree for the governor's mansion has come from the Tongass. The 2019 together tree came from near Ketchikan, and last year's came from the Petersburg Ranger District. It was delayed on its journey when the Coast Guard cutter Anacapa was rerouted to provide disaster assistance in the wake of the Haines landslides. But it got there in the end. This year's tree will be on display at the governor's mansion in Juneau for the holiday season. The mansion will hold an open house on December 7th.
It's such a prestigious thing, I think, that it's going to the governor's mansion. It's from Wrangell. So we just wanted to turn out and just show a good showing for it and let the tree go.
As tribal members sang Wrangell's paddle song, volunteers carried the tree across the bridge between Shakes Island and the harbor parking lot, through the lot, and down a ramp to the awaiting U.S. Coast Guard vessel Elderberry. The Christmas trees ride up to Juneau. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
That's it for tonight's KRBD Evening Report. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Eric Stone.